This is Lena Live. I'm Lena Miermont, your host. It is my distinct pleasure to continue our series of the program which has to do with the dentistry. If you remember, about a few weeks ago, we had a tremendously interesting, insightful, and memorable program with Dr. Tim Rainey. And we left the program with so many thoughts. We've been totally revolutionized with our ideas about dentistry. It is my just very special honor to continue these programs on the same line of information and introduce you to another doctor. Our guest today, Dr. Eric Zaremski. Eric, before I will throw myself in introducing you with your accomplishments and your talents, I like to welcome you, to thanking you for joining us, and wanted to make sure that you can feel as comfortable as you wish to talk about your experiences, your knowledge, and certainly your practice. I will ask you a very first question. What is your connection with Dr. Rainey? So we will have some kind of a logical continuation with your accomplishments.
Well, first of all, Lena, it's my pleasure to be on your show, and I am certainly honored also to be talking with you today. I'm a general dentist in the San Francisco area, so I've practiced general dentistry for about 15 years. My connection with Dr. Rainey has been, for about half of that time, I think 7 or 8 years ago, I met Dr. Rainey, and he introduced me to a lot of these principles that weren't taught, certainly, in dental school, that are a little bit more progressive ideas than was taught in the standard dental school protocols.
I'm sorry, I did not mean to interrupt you.
No.
Please finish your thought, because I was a little bit impatient to shift gears totally on you and your career starting from the beginning. But forgive me, and please go on with your thought.
Oh, no, not at all. I didn't mean to go on to a long biography. But certainly what we learned in dental school was pretty standard, is that we all learned in dental school, whether we're a dentist or a hygienist, to use a drill or to use a curette to scrape things. And the principles or the protocols that Dr. Rainey spoke about are certainly more on the preventative side than they are on the amputation side of things. And so it certainly, the skills that we learned in dental school, whether a dentist or a hygienist, are certainly valuable in treating patients. But we also need to look at, on the preventative side, what we can do before disease starts, rather than just treating the after effects of dental disease. And so that's really the main focus of what Dr. Rainey has pushed for all these years.
And now, since we have this connection, and thank you for making one very clearly, I'd like indeed to shift full focus on your profession and your career. I felt that you just had a lot of fascination about different sides in life. I know I'm being a bit presumptuous, but I was a bit intrigued that one of the trigger of your desire to be a dentist actually took place when you were being a very young child. And I learned even more that a particular interest was connected to the instruments which your father's dentist used. So that was quite a long-term connection, which certainly took a transformation from your child's curiosity towards the point where you became truly a brilliant dentist. I also noticed that you had this wonderful collaboration being a student, and at the same time you volunteered in Highlands Hospital in emergency room, and you been witnessing a oral surgeries, probably one of the most critical because they took place after some trauma and some accidents. Perhaps you can talk about your experiences and how did it set the foundation for your future career?
Well, I think as a kid, I was always fascinated with smiles and teeth. I'm not sure why, but you're right. I did visit my dad's dentist, and I thought it would be really cool to play with tools all day, and that sort of solidified this desire to be a dentist when I grew up. But every dentist that I had spoken with was so serious. I'd ask them questions, and they would take so long to answer the question that I thought that I'd really have to grow up and get serious about life before I could become a dentist, and I think that's what took me so long to go to dental school. But then I realized that being a dentist isn't, I don't have to be entirely serious about everything. And certainly there's some curiosity, and certainly as children we have much more curiosity than we do as adults. But there is a curiosity to doing more than what we learned in dental school. I mean, I think that we learned just the basics in dental school, and I think that it's a shame that some people go through their whole entire careers with, in any profession, is just doing things the way they learned in a professional school. And so I thought that there must be something more than using a drill or scraping things that I could do in dentistry to help people. And really, that's the basic goal of any healthcare profession is to help people care for their health. And that's kind of the motivation behind what I'm doing and what I'm trying to seek out new ways and new technologies to help people.
We certainly spend the second part of our program with a concrete approach, with a concrete technique, material, and equipment you're using. So that part will be one of the major focus of this program. I'm making that announcement, so our listeners will certainly plan their attention and will be somewhat in anticipation of what actually taking place in your office. I, however, like to dwell a little bit on what you just said and make a little parallel and give you a little bit of a compliment to make you a little bit uncomfortable, saying that from a few conversations which I had with you and my son had with you, it was a very different experience than just speaking to the dentist, to the doctor, to the person whom we tremble in to think how expensive that will be, what kind of complications we're going to be faced with. We both felt that we are talking to a human being. And unless you are fantastic in pretension, which I doubt very much, it was extremely comforting to sense that you are definitely having a very profound human understanding and perception. What does it take from the patient to trust his or her dentist? What does it take from the patient to start to be responsible for his and her care? And you already talked about prevention, and we're going to talk about this more. So I wanted to say that when you mentioned that you came to dentistry later in life. Now, first of all, you're a young man. I don't know what kind of a lady you're talking about. But there is a little parallel with us musicians because there was a huge shift from having career before you've been born or having career when you're more mature, when you know what to express, when you know how to communicate. And I think one of the huge pluses that you went to dental career, to the medical field, dealing with the people on your, as you said, later time, and I call it more mature years, is a tremendous eye-opening and readiness to experience new fields, new, very unknown ways, which normal dentists, the students, simply will be close to will be afraid to even think about. So let's talk a little bit about this conventional thinking, which you already touched upon. But I'm particularly very concerned about this because that's a major practice. This is very narrow field, dentistry. Please talk about your vision of it as a human being and as a professional.
Well, thank you. Kind words. I appreciate it. I think that you're right, is that from a patient's point of view, going into the dental office is a very scary proposition, or it can be a scary proposition. I mean, I think that what patients are most scared of are the dental drill with the noise and the shot. And so if you can start to eliminate, if you can do no shots and no drill dentistry, I think that the majority of the population would actually love it. I mean, I think that's what psychologically turns a lot of people off about going into the dental office. I think the statistic is that 50% of the people in the country actually go to the dentist. That's not a lot of people that are actually going. And I think of the 50%, I think the 20% actually go regularly. So there's a huge chunk of people in this country who don't go to the dentist or don't go regularly to the dentist because of a myriad of different reasons. But I think the main reason that I hear people come in, they come into the office, nothing personal, doc, but I hate dentists. And the main reason is because it's noisy and because it hurts. And so if we can start to eliminate that, like we talked about being preventative, if we can start to look at problems before they occur or before they get bigger and start to treat them in that way, we can start to eliminate a lot of the pain of dentistry and a lot of the scariness around dentistry. And I think what you were talking about is empathy, and that's a big word, and it encompasses a lot. And I think as a healthcare practitioner, you have to be empathetic towards your patients. You have to understand where they're coming from. You have to understand, obviously, you have to understand their conditions or their medical conditions, and you have to understand their psychological barriers or issues, and to allow them to be more comfortable in the office.
I think there is an absolutely logical connection which you suggested is a dentistry and a connection to the whole body health. I would like to shift just for a moment and say certain things which I particularly very concerned about is somewhat denial in one sense of a tremendous cost of healthcare, the most expensive in the world, and yet not to recognize the true reasons for that, not to see how we need to be much more responsible for our own health. It's inevitable. We cannot be our own doctors, but we certainly have to take advantage of a person like yourself who are so magnificently open to share your knowledge, to share your skill, and not only learn from that, but the practice. And it's not a secret. Everything starts from the mouth. So if we can function there, then the digestion and all other benefits are coming from that. So I didn't even mention the children, because when you've been talking about this very negative, scary experience, like a noise and cessation, of course, the first thing comes in mind, situation with the children. So I like to gradually making a shift to concrete approach of preventive care. And I already learned some of it from your conversations with my son, and something which I like to start, jump into the fire, saying there are certain things that are quite simple, and they are doable, and they are even inexpensive. So let's start from that famous oil, which is not used as a salad dressing, but certainly used as a healing property. Please tell us about that.
I want to touch on a couple things that you mentioned in in that too, in that the it is so important to understand that the mouth is the start of everything, and that the mouth and the whole body, the systemic health of our bodies, is so tied together. And that's something that we're just now starting to realize, I think, in the medical professions, in dentistry, is that for years and years and years, the mouth and the rest of the body were so separated in terms of treating medical conditions and actually understanding that they're all connected. There's many things and many signs and symptoms that I, as a dentist, can see in the mouth that register on a systemic level and for people's systemic health. I think that just in the last few years, there's been many articles, many public articles been put out on that oral and systemic connection. In 1891, there was a fellow named Willsby Miller who wrote a treatise saying that he thought that there was oral bacteria causing systemic and whole body diseases. And it's taken us 100 and some odd years to actually start to implement that. And so I think that's where we need to look at. We need to look at the whole body health, and I think you're right in that the mouth starts to mirror what's going on with the body. And in terms of children, I think that's what's so exciting about, for me, I think that's what's exciting about dentistry in a lot of ways is treating children, is that you can actually sort of, children are so curious and they're so willing to learn and to model after the adults in their lives that we can start to model a good oral behavior with the children, and we can also prevent so much future problems in children just by treating and doing very, very minimally invasive techniques with children and help them live a much healthier life. So you were talking about things that people can do on a preventative level to start to change the oral biology, so to speak, of their mouths and start to become more healthy orally. And I think one of the things that comes to mind, the first thing that comes to mind, is that we all have bacteria in our mouths, and that's not something that we can change. We all have about 100 or 120 different varieties of bacteria in our mouths, and most of them are good, and some of them are bad, and some of them are the ones that cause the problem. Some cause cavities, and some cause gum problems. Well, we know that bacteria as a whole, they're very smart, but they also like it when it's very acidic. They like an acidic environment. They thrive and they make lots of babies when it's acidic. So now if we can make our mouths more alkaline or more basic, then we start to lower the bacterial population in our mouth. And then we start to lower all the problems that come along with those bacteria. So I think baking soda is one of the first things that comes to mind because it's inexpensive and it's easy to get. It doesn't taste great, but we can certainly brush with it, or we can mix a little bit in water and use that as a mouth rinse. Xylitol sugar is another one where it's in candies, it's in mints, it's in gum, and it's an empty sugar, and bacteria feed on it and they die. It's also something that these things will start to, the preventative measures that we're talking about will actually cross the placenta. So a prenatal mom doing these techniques will actually benefit her unborn baby, which I think is tremendous, because now we can start to do things on a more economical level that will help prenatally to increase the health of mothers as well as children.
This is beyond excitement, and thank you for somewhat controlling my enthusiasm and jump a little faster to some supplements. I'm very grateful that you expanded in this field and described so many important issues. In fact, I have a few questions about the bacteria, and that's something probably unfortunately involved with inheritance. If your parents or grandparents had the problem, you have a good chance to inherit this situation. What are your observations on this?
Well, certainly, yes. And that's entirely where we get our bacteria. You got your bacteria from your mom and dad. I got mine from my mom and dad. So that's sort of unavoidable in that way. Our parents are going to kiss us as babies. They're going to taste our baby food. They're going to do a lot of things that are natural and normal, but they're going to pass on their oral bacteria to us. But that just means that now we understand that it's a bacterially mediated disease rather than brushing and flossing and make it go away disease. So we have to understand that if we can control our bacteria, whether it's good or bad, or whether it's high or low in terms of population, then we start to understand that we can start to control dental disease, dental cavities and gum disease. So that's where the picture stands. Even though we inherit it, there's a way to control it.
Way to control it and balance it. This, when you mention the baking soda, is that actually for brushing or just for rinsing?
Both.
Both. And it's not considered, you know, be honest with you, I was once a bit put on a corner many years ago, obviously facing my own struggle with this. I heard about baking soda, and that was many years before myself and my son had the opportunity to meet your team of thoughts. I discussed this with one of the past dentists, and they said, oh, this is very abrasive. And then I said that how it can be more abrasive than, let's say, cleaning or even other substances which sometimes we have in our mouth, like nuts and some other things. So can you clarify this confusion about being abrasive and using baking soda and use tremendous benefits of it?
Well, I think that the main issue that we look at is the wearing away of our teeth, and that would be anybody's concern, I think patients as well as dentists. So we have to step back and look at the global picture. If somebody has a very acidic mouth, if we know that that acid is going to wear away the enamel, or it's going to at least make the enamel soft. So during an acidic episode that somebody has, and sometimes they're not able to identify that, but sometimes they are, we want to avoid brushing our teeth because we know that at that point the enamel is going to be soft. We want to just rinse our mouth out with water or things like that to lower the acidity level of our mouth. If somebody doesn't have acid challenges, then we're not necessarily as focused on when we brush and when we don't. But in terms of baking soda, in terms of the abrasivity of baking soda, we know that baking soda is much more abrasive when it's dry versus when it's wet. So as soon as you put it in your mouth with your saliva and with any water that might be in there, you're going to wet that baking soda. So it's really the idea of using baking soda is to raise the pH of your mouth, is to make it more alkaline. It's not necessarily to scrub things away or to kind of get rid of things. It goes back to what we learned in dental school, is that we were taught to scrape things or to cut things away if they were bad. And so it's not necessarily that we're trying to scrub things away. We're just trying to change the pH of the oral environment with the baking soda. And likewise, we don't need to necessarily get in there with steel wool and start scrubbing on our teeth with the baking soda. So once it turns wet, it's much less abrasive, and we don't need to use as much pressure with our toothbrushes when we're brushing with it. So in those ways it's going to be a lot less abrasive than if it were just dry powder.
So it's a less work but more effect. That sounds absolutely wonderful, especially for children. Wanted to ask you, if someone is very acidic, then this person can take advantage of soda a few times a day, probably. Am I thinking right?
Certainly, yeah.
And how do you check this acidity and presence of this very unwelcome friend in our mouth?
Well, I think one easy way is to use pH strips. That's a relatively inexpensive. You could probably go down to the drugstore and get some pH strips for a few bucks. It's not going to give you a definitive level of your pH because your pH is going to change during the day. Depending on what you eat and drink and the time of day, it's going to vary. I think if you took if you sampled your salivary pH a few times a week, you might get a general idea of about where you are. Teeth tend to get cavities or tend to decay at pH 5.5. And so pH 7 is neutral, and that's what our body is at. Our body likes to be neutral. So when you start to go to 5.5, then we start to get cavities. Most people, well, I'm not going to say most people because I can't speak for the general population, but if you're at 6.7, 6.8, that's pretty close to 7, and now that starts to get on the healthy range. But if you're in the low 6s and the high 5s, then you need to start looking at it and start to raise your pH towards that 7. Our blood is at 7.4, and our bodies like to be around 7. So that should give you kind of an idea of what range or what numbers you should be looking at for your mouth.
Absolutely. Very clear, and it makes sense because you get information which you can apply to something and be under control, and that's where the first preventive care starts or a correction. I'd like to take a little moment and to remind our listeners, in case if someone just joined us, that we have tremendous opportunity to speak to brilliant dentist, fantastic human being, and extremely sharing, whose academic accomplishments, being adjunct professor of the University of the Pacific, also couples with a lot of activities and general services donated to the community, to children, to students, and here he is donating his time to us. So we are learning as much as we can, as fast as we can, and we're very grateful for that. So I'm continuing with our discussion with Dr. Eric Zaremski, and we are going to the list of things which we can do at home. And the first one was a baking soda with the coordination of pH, with the use of pH strips to check our acidity in our mouth. And prior to this, there was a very eloquent and transparent description of the problem and how it is critically important to start from preventive medicine. And if someone was already unfortunate to be faced with the problems, need to start as soon as possible with the corrective procedures, which we just about continue to describe. Eric, I'm going to jump now to the oil. As you can see, I'm very impatient with that part, having a little experience of my own with this. But please continuing this, unless you have other thoughts, which I more than welcome to invite you to express.
Well, I certainly want to talk about what patients can do at the dentist to sort of demand a different style of care, for sure. But what you're alluding to, Lena, is that is ozonated oils. And one of the things I'm really passionate about is ozone, and I think it's just a wonderful tool that we have, because in essence, it will kill bacteria, it will kill fungi, and it will kill viruses on contact. And that's really the three major pathogens that cause disease and cause human problems, human anguish, is that dental cavities are caused by bacteria. Gum disease is caused by bacteria, and there's a whole host of, you know, we get the flu, which is a virus, and there's a whole bunch of other things that cause problems with our bodies that are fungally related or viral related also. So ozone becomes sort of a multi-purpose or an all-purpose antimicrobial that will kill all these pathogens. So in dentistry, it's perfect because we can introduce the gas into a tooth that has a cavity, and we can essentially stop that cavity from ever getting bigger. So the patient doesn't have to go back to the dentist in 2 years and say, oh, there's another cavity right there where we worked on 2 years ago. Or we can put it into the gums where patients have a deeper pocket, and those pockets will actually start to heal. And so if we introduce the gas to the gums and these deep pockets heal, there's it's much more encouraging to go to the dentist or go to the hygienist and get your teeth cleaned when things are starting to improve, rather than hearing the brush more and floss more speech. Which I'm not discouraging you from brushing and from flossing. That's not what I'm saying. Is that you still need to do those things, but you can also there's other things that you can do. And what you're alluding to, or what we mentioned, was the ozonated oils, which are a perfect adjunct for patients to take home and apply to their own gums. And just the fact that they're doing it on a daily basis is going to help so much more. It's going to help have their mouth become so much more healthy than they would if they were only just brushing and flossing. So now this becomes an adjunct to all that to help allow your mouth to become much more healthy.
I cannot overemphasize. In fact, I feel that I'm talking about some kind of a passionate piece of music to describe to you how incredibly revealing your suggestions are, because indeed you're talking to one who is brushing, who is flossing, and I'm not going to go selfishly into more detailed description, but I will be the first to tell you it is not the only answer. In fact, it is so frustrating because some people who are obsessively inclined to brush and to rinse and to floss, they are sometimes even create perhaps a little abrasive approach, but lacking that nourishment, that preventive care, and that healing effect which you're describing. So I am particularly very, very grateful, and I would not otherwise probably establish this whole line of program and devotion of mine if I would not experience this the first hand. I also need to, to mention at one point we had very, very interesting conversation with the cardiologist Dr. Nissen from Cleveland Clinic. We did talk about dentistry and cardiology because for some partly unknown reason, there is a connection between bacteria in the teeth and the problems in the heart. In fact, it was a fluctuation of the approach to take antibiotic before the treatment or not to take, how much for how long. And an antibiotic is right there, is a killer of a good bacteria. So I'm entering a somewhat conflicting area, which you know so much, much better than myself. But the reason I'm doing this only to emphasize and to thank you particularly because there is a much deeper connection between the mouth and digestion and the certain organs. So by taking care of this immediately after you know that you have a problem is a tremendous prevention from deterioration of some other vital organs.
Of course. Like we mentioned before, there's certainly the connection there. And what they've found now is the research is showing they've actually found oral bacteria in the lining of the arteries in the heart. So they know that oral bacteria migrates to different parts of the body. And actually, in nursing homes, that's the major cause of most diseases is orally related bacteria. So we know that it causes systemic problems. That's sort of a given now. And there's a link between oral bacteria and heart disease. There's a link between oral bacteria and pancreatic disease. The whole host of different organs are affected by oral bacteria. So that link is pretty well established. And so that just speaks to the fact that we need to keep our mouths more healthy. We need to reduce our bacterial level in our mouths much more than we've been taught to brush and floss. And that goes back to when you've done well with brushing and flossing, but you've still had problems in your mouth. You still had dental problems. And it goes back to, you talked about the frustration of going to the dentist and still having dental problems after you've brushed and flossed like a madwoman. It's frustrating, I think, on both aspects, from the patient's point of view and from the dental team's point of view, is that they see all these problems that they have to fix, and the patient swears that they've been brushing and flossing. Well, where's the disconnect here? The disconnect is that we're not looking at the bacterial levels. And so now when you start to put all these adjunct new technologies and new products into the mix, where the dental team can use these products in their office and the patients can go home and use these products at home, now you start to see actual change. You start to see mouths becoming much more healthy. And now the dental team doesn't have to lecture on brushing and flossing, and the patient doesn't have to feel guilty about not flossing 3 times a day.
And make situation even worse, different dentists will tell you different will share with you different advice, and different hygienists will share you with different tools. But this is all, I call it negative cosmetic, because it does only in intervention, but in an extremely superficial level. So what are you talking about is profoundly involved and profoundly connected to the transformation of a bacterial level, which makes tissues healthier, which obviously we didn't even touch about the bones, which prevents from the bone loss, such an incredibly screaming issue, especially women after 50th. So what you are describing is a cyclopedia of the approaches which we are able to use. And what's so fascinating about this is that it is so simple. It just requires discipline, which is obviously includes regularity, and it requires a quality of those oils. I like to take an opportunity and to ask you where all of us can find you. I mean, I and my son do know, many patients of yours do, but some who are new are extremely curious. So I will let you to tell us about your website and where your location is.
Basically, what we're talking about here is once you ozone essentially comes out as a gas. We have ozone generators here in the office that generate gas from pure oxygen. So oxygen is O2, and then you add another oxygen atom to it, and it becomes ozone. Well, ozone, typically what we know of ozone is it's in the atmosphere, and it's associated with air pollution. But we know that the reason it's associated with air pollution is because it's easy to measure. And so we can measure all, it grabs all the pollution that we throw up into the air. And so that's why people associate it with it. But it's not really air pollution. It's the one that's actually doing the good part. So in the office, we're making it from pure oxygen. We take that gas that comes out, that ozone gas, and we bubble it through a vegetable oil, say olive oil or safflower oil, for a few days. It actually bonds to the oil, and it becomes stable. And it has those healing properties that we talked about earlier of killing bacteria, killing fungi in the mouth. And so now we can take that ozonated oil and we can apply it in our mouth to our gums and to fight this bacteria that causes the problem. Our our website is o3therapeutics.com. You can go to that. You can buy a few different types of oils. You can also go to ozoneoils.com and purchase some different oils there. And you can apply those at home. There's no side effects, which is really terrific, because obviously we were talking about antibiotics earlier. And with antibiotics there's a certain level of side effects that come with antibiotics. With ozone, there's no side effects. It doesn't taste great. And some people sort of abhor the taste of it, but it does such good. It really lowers the bacterial load. It makes things healthy. It heals everything. It heals bone. It heals gums. It heals teeth. You can actually see on dental x-rays from one time to the next time where bone is actually growing back because we administered ozone in that area, and that patients took the ozone oil home and applied it to that area. So
it is absolutely extraordinary. Are these oils supposed to be kept in the refrigerator? How much we have to pray for its wonderful qualities and preservation?
Well, actually, bonding to the oils, the ozone becomes stable over time, and it will actually be stable in that oil for years and years. Keeping it in the fridge will make it last a little bit longer, and we'll keep it cool. You don't want to get it hot, because it will start to debond from the oil. So keeping it in the fridge is a good idea, although it gets a little bit more gel-like, and so it's a little bit tougher to handle, but you can always take it out and just let it sit at room temperature for a few minutes, and then it becomes a little bit more oily and easier to use.
Yes, and you use it once, twice, or five times a day?
Well, as many times as you can. I mean, I think five times a day might be impacting daily life, and I think that once a day is great. I mean, if you can get it in there twice a day, that's even better. But just on a daily basis, like you talked about, regularity really, really helps, and it's really noticeable, and change can occur.
I might comment that you said it doesn't taste great. Frankly, if you can do two things. Number one, during that taste, you'll think about this drill and shot. That taste becomes like a best dessert instantly. The other thing is, smell is very exotic. And eventually, you probably will get used to it, because there's something very special about this. This is ozone aura, probably, towards that end. But it is a very exotic experience. I already tried a few times, and certainly no comparison with the experience at a dentist's office who does anything but that. So I am welcoming everyone who, just as a impatient as I am, to try it, to continue it, and make it as a part of their life. I'd like to ask you just a curious question. You graduated your dental school in 1996, I remember. And I mentioned that was the Pacific Dental School. Were you studying there already this progressive method, including laser technology, because you've been involved with the research? Or indeed, you're being forced to be a conventional student and then to make a shift on your own?
Yeah, I think most dental schools now, I mean, I think there's 50 dental schools in the country, most of them are still teaching conventional dentistry, although there is a push in every dental school, I know this for a fact, is to talk about what they call CAMBRA, and that's caries risk management. And it's looking at the bacteria. It's looking at more of a preventative type side of dentistry. Whether dentists choose to practice that style of dentistry when they graduate from dental school is their choice. And that's certainly why you talked about it earlier. You go to 10 different dentists and you're going to get 10 different opinions. But I think that patients, as a generalization, have to start becoming more educated. And I think your show, Lena, is a great way to start. I think there's the education is really, really valuable. And I think there's all this information out with the internet that patients can be very educated dentally as well as whole body health-wise. And so armed with this education, now it's much easier to go into a dental office and actually ask for what they want. They have to be advocates for their body because it's their body. They have to decide what's best for their body. And so I think when you're going into a dentist's office, rather than only having the dentist dictate or having the hygienist dictate what they have to do, whether it's brushing or flossing or whatever, is to ask the dentist, what are the options here? And with the education that they have, be able to go in and actually understand these options. You have to allow the dentist to make sure that the patient understands what their options are, and then that way they can make an educated and informed decision about how they are treated in that dental office. And now the dental experience becomes a different avenue, a less scary environment, and a much more health-driven type of environment.
Such an important advice, because people are still quite terrified, and also this semi-prestigious look of the dentist who convey the message, I know it all, and you are under my supervision, and you're caged in because I know better what's going on with you. This mentality sometimes underpowering patients' most important voice for their own health. And I know also for the fact that number of superbly talented people, even with so-called connections, were damaged because they were not proactive, just like you said.
Right.
They did
right.
not discuss their specific issues, because dentistry, again, as you absolutely so clearly and physiologically convincingly put together, connection between dentistry and other issues. This one approach for all definitely is the patient's mission to change. And I particularly very thankful to you and Dr. Rennie for the fact that you are giving such a crisp, clear explanation of quite complicated situation with the physiology, with the obviously medical conditions of each patient. But you are giving these tools, and you're giving this mental approach, which called confidence, which certainly allows us to become much more self-assertive. This is such an incredible thing, and I have to also tell you that comes to other profession. It's not a secret that alternative care sometimes should be the care, and your dentistry should be the dentistry.
Right.
Yet we are faced with the reality, and that's life, where we have to separate what is good for us, what can be damaging for us, and what we absolutely need to go for. So I just wanted to ask you, what kind of a literature, besides your website, can be obtained by the listeners, by patients, and can be used as a guidance?
I think that there's so much on the internet that it's even hard to know where to start. I think that they can certainly Google ozone and dentistry, ozone and medicine, and they can see a litany of research, a hundred years of research of ozone. Ozone's been used in medicine since the turn of the last century, the 1920s, just not in this country because it was banned in the 30s in medicine, and then it was reintroduced in the 90s. So it has a short history here in this country. But there's tons and tons of research out there on ozone. But also Googling preventative dentistry and Googling things like baking soda and dentistry or just xylitol. There's so much written about xylitol and the research behind it and how it affects our health. They could just Google that. Xylitol is XYLITOL. It's kind of an odd spelling. There's also another company I wanted to mention real quick too that has sort of a novel way of looking at this problem too, in that they measure the energy levels of the bacteria in your mouth. So we can take a salivary sample, and it will actually has a little meter that will measure the energy level of the bacteria and give us sort of a numerical value of the relative population in that patient's mouth. The company's called CariFree, so they could also Google that and they could look up that. And that's got a consumer side to it also, where the patients can purchase products that speak towards that preventative end.
Now, this is fantastic information. And however, the best source, again, is your website, your establishment. And if you kindly can repeat this again, since we are facing the cadence of our program.
Well, they can certainly go to ozoneoils.com is my new website. I'm not sure if it's going to be up this week, so they can't really go to it today. But also o3therapeutics.com is my older site, and that has a lot of information on it. There's also another site, the International Association of Ozone and Healthcare and Dentistry, so that would be IAOHD.org. And that has just tons and tons of ozone research on it. And those would be great places to start. And they can certainly Google me, and they can call me at the office if they have any questions. And I'm certainly willing to talk to anybody that wants to give me a call.
I'm already thanking you for all calls which you're going to take. And I'd like to conclude by saying that our very special guest, Dr. Eric Zaremski, who is a dentist officially, but truly goes way beyond just the dentistry with his knowledge of physiology of the whole body, with his empathy to people, with his tremendous patience, which is very rare in our very hectic world. And Eric, on this note, I wanted to thank you so much for starting this conversation. I am sure that you will have more than just productive years ahead of you. And personally, I'm wishing you the most of the satisfaction. And just to continue this revolution, this opening, and such a valuable help which you give to all of us.
Well, thank you so much, Lena. It has been a pleasure and an honor to be on your show.
Thank you again, and I will conclude with my musical thought, because I do not believe any other time now will permit for any other information. And frankly, we had so much to digest and so much to include in our everyday life. I'm personally very thankful to Dr. Eric Zaremski. I have a full intention to continue our dialogue and perhaps to speak to you, my listeners, who might have more questions. That was Lena Live. I'm Lena Mirmont, your host. Until next time.
Thank you.